Hi, everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle, and I represent the Political Center, and I have on the political right, John Dougal.
Hey, Natalie. Good to meet you.
And another one of my friends on the political left, Shireen Gourbani.
Hello, and listeners, we are hearing so much from you. I have to say, Nelson wrote back to us again. Thank you for the recommendation. We love hearing from you.
Yeah, and I've been hearing a lot of people tapping me on the shoulder that are listening to the program. I think it's because politics, public affairs, different worldviews, it's really newsy these days.
Uh-huh.
And you might say some people get exhausted with it, but when it comes
or
from...
fatigued.
Well, yeah, but when it comes from a place of finding common ground, higher ground, which I hope this program's about, maybe it's a feel-good for people.
Yeah, I hope so.
But we're recording the day after the 2025 elections. And that was a big deal. Let's start nationally for the first segment here. And John, Shireen, what did you feel? What did you see? What do you want to bring up?
Go ahead, John.
I would say it was a shellacking for the Republicans. I mean, I think these were hard races for Republicans to win. These were blue states voting largely for blue candidates. But I think the spread was bigger than Republicans anticipated it would be. If you look down with Jack in New Jersey, we thought it was going to be closer, especially how he did 4 years ago. And it was not. The other thing I would say is I think we saw the Democrats with two different strategies. In Virginia with the governor and New Jersey with the governor, I think you saw, from my perspective, Democratic candidates who were trying to pivot more to the center and to pick up folks, where in New York, clearly the mayor of New York, Mandami, was not pivoting to the center. He was celebrating his socialist leanings and championing that. And throw you in the face of Andrew Cuomo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I just have to ask. So these are blue states? In your opinion?
In my opinion, these are generally New York, New Jersey.
Okay, New York.
And you look at Virginia, and I would say that generally it has swung more blue than red from my perspective, even though they had a Republican governor right now.
Okay. So I would say Virginia is a purple state, soundly. Georgia, which had two Democrats elected statewide for, I believe it was like a public service commission, is a purple, if not red-leaning state. Mm-hmm. Pennsylvania, which had Supreme Court justices on the ballot, also is a mixed bag for sure. Mm-hmm. And I would say leans blue, but definitely is not a deep blue state. I think seeing specifically what happened down ballot is particularly interesting and should be alarming to Republicans, and I think should give hope for Democrats.
I saw a stunning graphic. I believe it was in the Washington Post. Encourage our listeners to go check it out. But it was of every county in Virginia, and it showed the difference between the vote for governor last night and the Harris election. And did you swing to the left or to the right? So they had these really neat little arrows. It was really good analytical design. And the length of the arrows was how far you swung, and the color was which way, you know, I mean, whether you swung red or blue. But it was like ubiquitous.
Yes.
It was all blue. Everywhere.
Yeah.
And why was that from you guys' perspective?
Well, I think it's because of DOGE. I think it's because of the treatment of federal employees in an enclave like Virginia that's so dependent and so close to the federal workforce. That was my initial take.
I think that this president, professional grifter, came into office promising to deliver lower costs for the American people. Many of these folks, if they're on the ACA, we're starting to see what their premiums were going to look like going forward. We're starting to see reporting coming out of Utah that's distressing. I think people feel like life is expensive and this is chaos.
Shireen, do you know this? I mean, you know, have you followed this Abigail Spanberger?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, tell me about her, because you know, it's interesting. There was the two governors that were women, but Spanberger is the one that they start talking about as a potential VP. She must be special.
Oh, I do think she's special.
Tell us more.
Someday we got to get... Ben McAdams back on the show, because she really, there are many parallels, I think, between the way that she approaches her service and the way that he has in the past. I think that she is an incredibly, well, she's a public servant. She has been, you know, had many, a deep commitment to public service, to service to this country, and is a person who seems to be so unfussy, really kind of plain spoken, sort of plain looking in some ways, right? And I think that the way that she approaches her politics is from just such a grounded, reasonable voice. And I think that that resonated this election, and it has in the past too. She's won some tight races before, challenging races.
And if I remember right, didn't she tell Democratic leadership, never use the word socialist again?
Yeah.
So it was kind of an interesting contrast, her statements in the past about that. And then you look at New York City and what they elected.
Zoran. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think I would also say these are both candidates that fit their states. I think that's important.
If I have my numbers right, I realize it's a moving count, but she's ahead by 15 percentage points.
It's a whomping.
It's a whomping. And so that was pretty interesting to me. Let's go to Zoran Mamdani. I listened to his full sort of acceptance speech. Did either of you?
I did.
Okay.
I listened to part of it.
Okay. So, Shireen, I didn't like what he did.
I believe you. Go ahead.
I think that
he wished Cuomo well in his private life.
I think there's a difference between campaigning and governing. And when you are elected by the margin he was elected and all of that, I think that first speech has to be governing, where you're pulling in everybody and not just your base. And he went straight to the base, in my opinion. He had this one great line, John, where he said, Donald Trump, I know you're watching.
Four
and
words.
I got four words for you. Turn the volume up. Yeah. Like, hear me. This is war.
Yeah.
I didn't like it.
Okay. So, I mean, I didn't take
give
it
him,
as
give him
this
a break.
War.
He's only a 30-something. Well, he doesn't have a lot of experience with that.
No, that's a great point.
Yeah. You know, what I heard, and I guess, oh my goodness, I might get emotional, because what I saw in the last weeks, the level of Islamophobia took me to a dark place. It really did. And I feel like I've talked about this before, but I'm half Iranian. When I really came to realize and understand that and feel it viscerally was after 9/11, to see the way that his background, the fact that he was putting out campaign information, literature, tweets in Arabic, there are a lot of Arabic speakers in that community, right?
Right.
And the way that that was weaponized as just blatant racism, just blatant Islamophobia, really hit, like, that took me to a place where I was like, this isn't going to happen.
Yeah.
This city will not elect him because we fall into this trap. And to see him come through that really did feel like uplifting, defiant, like it meant something to me.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear it.
It
apparently meant a lot to voters.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I should say, though, I believe, I'm not sure where he's at now, but it was like 50 plus when I last checked in. Kamala Harris won that by 68%, I believe, New York City. So this is a win. But it's not a landslide when we think about kind of Democrats generally.
So my wife and I saw a picture, and it was 9/11 with, you know, the Twin Towers burning and picture of him and calling out being a Muslim.
Yeah.
And I told my wife, I said, I don't care about his race or religion. My problem is his policies.
Yeah.
That's where I've got the issue, is the policies. And I hate that too many are making this about race or religion.
I do too.
Or it shouldn't be that.
Yeah, that's fair.
But when it's free this and free and fast buses and on and on and on, the laundry list of free that ain't free from my perspective, somebody's going to pay for it.
Yeah.
And that's where it's like, I don't get it. And some people will talk about New York being the heart of capitalism.
Yeah. Okay. So there's two contrasting cities from the elections last night, San Francisco and New York. And New York's gotten all the attention because of this, you know, social Democrat and whatnot. But the mayor that's been elected in San Francisco, it's Daniel Lurie, L-U-R-I-E. He's 48, so he's young, but he takes a different approach. He's a centrist. He's business friendly. He's from Levi Strauss kind of family money, FYI. I just think that's interesting because both Mamdani and this guy both come from from privileged backgrounds. But he wants more police. He wants higher density instead of like rent controls. And he only talks about San Francisco. He doesn't talk about Washington or President Trump. And I saw this article that contrasted those two. And I'm going to really watch that, because I think the winning formula is to be like the San Francisco mayor and be a great mayor of your city and not play into the culture wars and be business friendly and be a centrist.
San Francisco went too far to the left and they're having to come back.
Yeah,
so many
this
businesses
guy's leading
and people
that.
Were fleeing.
So I'm just pointing that out to listeners and to both of you. Just I thought it was a really, they both have these sunny dispositions.
Yeah.
But they're coming at similar problems differently.
So right now, let me ask you a question, Shireen. You know, if you look at Gavin Newsom, he said Democrats are no longer on their heels. We're on our toes.
You know?
And so we're in the upswing and the Republicans are in the decline. So if you're advising them, you're a Democratic consultant.
Yes.
Okay. The national level, we won't worry about states and local, but at the national level, what do you think is the message? What do you think the Democrats are going to do? Because I see pivot to the center and I see go to the left. And what do you advise them? What do you think they're going to get from this?
So what I saw actually across, I'm not as familiar with that San Francisco race, but actually across the governor's race in Virginia and in New Jersey to see kind of the discourse that was happening broadly across these Democrats. Even though they took different, I would say, strains of this argument, what I heard was a return to the working class, an actual forefronting of people's challenges, their lives. I believe it's New Jersey that's going to call an emergency on electricity prices. Just seeing like kind of person after person find that thing that's actually complicating and making people's lives difficult at the kitchen table, back to the kitchen table. And Mamdani was endorsed by the Working People's Party, which has a lot of, I think, core tenets that actually you would very much agree with, again, policy achievement-wise difference of opinion. But when we think about high-quality childcare as being essential to a workforce, when we think about the fact that if you work a full-time job, that you should be able to live in that city that you work in, those kinds of messages resonate with me, and I think they resonate with a lot of Utahns too. But finding that flavor and really talking about issues in a way that connects to the populace and finding those candidates that connect in meaningful ways, that's the path forward. I really think it is. And I do think people didn't feel connected to Kamala Harris.
Natalie, what do you think the message for the Republicans?
The D side, my thing is stay on the tabletop issues about affordability and, you know, those issues. But it'd be the same advice to the R's. You know, let's take care of our economy.
But what message do you think the R's got out of last night?
Oh, what did they get? I think they want to get the government open again.
Okay.
I think a
big part of it was this wasn't us, not our fault. It was them and, you know, whatever.
I think they feel like they had bad candidates running. Their candidate selection they don't feel good about.
Yeah. Now, to me, my key takeaway is really James Carville. It's the economy stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So Joe Biden, it's the economy. It sucks. Donald Trump, we're going to give you a try. And right now they're going, the economy still sucks.
And
we're
going to
try something else.
Now it's the government's
stupid. Right now,
because the government's making all sorts of mistakes.
Well, if you look at tariffs, if you look at the shutdown, if you look at everything else, it translates into the economy.
Yeah.
In my mind.
That's fair.
It translates into the pocketbook.
What food's on the table?
Yeah.
Let's take a short break and then let's talk about some local races.
Sounds great.
Okay. Natalie Gochner with Shireen Gorbani and John Dougal. Stay tuned, everyone.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on UPR. We'd love to hear from our listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. Once again, that's BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Shireen Gorbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. We're talking the elections, and there's a lot that happened locally.
Well, before we go there, we were talking the economy. Let me ask you, what do you think about the Supreme Court? The U.S. Supreme Court, we're recording on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. They just heard about the Trump tariffs, and mm-hmm. we're listening to that. They're going to be considering that.
And they sound quite skeptical tariffs are constitutional.
That he has the power to do this.
Somehow he has emergency powers.
Uh-huh.
That when he gets upset at Toronto for doing a TV ad, he can impose tariffs. They're skeptical of those emergency powers.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, here's how I think of it. We have concentrated so much power in the executive branch at this point, and I think it's unwise. And I think the legislative branch should be clawing it back. And I'm grateful that the Supreme Court can be an actor in helping to do that. As an economist, the tariffs are really troubling to me. And it's both the uncertainty that they cause, the chaos that they cause, but it also puts a tax between you and a purchase.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, you affect the market economy and you don't get optimum results.
Well, the Chief Justice asked a question. It was along the lines of, okay, so the president can impose a tariff of any amount on any product at any time mm-hmm. for any duration.
Yeah.
That seems to be a misfit of the law.
Doesn't it, though?
What a gentle way to say it. You can totally
manipulate the economy that way. You can manipulate American industry that way. And that's just too much power.
Yeah.
Well, and the simple fact that the courts have talked in the past, Congress does not hide an elephant in a mouse hole. And so that's where, if we haven't used it in the past, highly skeptical, unless Congress has clearly stated you have this authority, the courts have been skeptical. And they've regularly kicked things back and said, Congress, do your job.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not. That's
whether they're going to come back to work or not.
So stay tuned.
Yeah.
Okay. So back to these local elections. Let's go Salt Lake City first, the capital city. You have these council races happening. I watched a few of them. Chris Wharton is a favorite of mine.
So
I know him to be a very kind, solid talented, a well-meaning person, and he was successful.
Incredible. Yes, I agree with all of
ranked choice voting.
Yep. It was an interesting race. There were, I believe, five candidates. This was my ballot. Some folks that have been out there really, really working, including Lydia Huntsman, Hernandez, and then Blake McClary, who also ran a really nice campaign. David Berg, whose politics I quite enjoy.
Yeah. Nice to see this caliber of candidate wanting to go serve their city.
Yeah. So it was interesting to see, because I do believe this is Councilmember Wharton's third term. Mm-hmm. And I do think sometimes people get a little tired of folks. So it was nice to see, you know.
It shows me that he's conducting himself well for those two terms, because it's hard to get reelected.
It's hard to get
a
third.
Erica Carlson. This is in District 5.
Yeah. Shereen. So Erica is a new council member. Darren Mano was in this seat and decided not to run again. So this was an interesting race, I thought, because it was between two people that I think have maybe a little bit of a different approach coming towards what safety looks like in the ballpark community. Well, there was a lot of conversation around that. And ultimately, Erica raised a lot of money and
succeeded.
You know, yeah, succeeded.
And then you have District 1 on the west side. This is Victoria Petro's seat.
Yeah.
Still a little bit up for grabs. They're still like finishing the...
Close, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we did have another one that was unopposed.
In Sugar House area.
Yeah. But I'll just say
this is Sarah Young.
Sarah Young. We do have, I think, largely probably the same city council coming back. Yeah.
John, you just kind of watched us go after that. I don't live in Salt Lake City. I've only lived in Salt Lake City in my life for a couple of years when I was in college. But I follow it.
Yeah.
Just because it's our capital.
Yeah. And what about Murray? I saw your mayor.
Admit, Salt Lake City was not one of the races I looked at last night to see the outcome.
Okay. Well, we'll get into what you were watching, but let's talk
Mid-Valley.
Yeah, Murray,
the incumbent. Well, you know, the incumbent mayor was reelected. It's not unlike a lot of these mayors in the suburbs. I guess it's 9 of the 11 incumbents across the Salt Lake Valley are leading as we tape this.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say just shout out to Monica Zoltansky, who I think is doing a lot of great work in Sandy, really working to build trust in her community.
Dustin Gettle. How you say the last name? I thought it was
Zoltansky.
Just Z.
Yeah, Monica Z.
Mayor Z.
Yeah. Don Ramsey.
Don Ramsey.
Gets reelected by a large amount.
In South Jordan, who's been diligently serving her community for many times.
I always tell someone that she would make a good governor or lieutenant governor.
Okay. Yeah. Troy Walker and Draper got reelected.
Yep. And now an interesting one, Representative Galen Bennion will be the mayor of Cottonwood Heights. And so that means that we'll have an open seat at the legislature where Democrats will get to come together and nominate an individual.
Some action for the Democrats.
Yeah, that's fun. That's
Cottonwood
fun.
Heights is an interesting area, right? Because it's sort of an upper socioeconomic characteristics, and tends to be pretty moderate.
Yeah, it does.
That's how you're thinking about it.
I actually lived there for about 2 months when I first moved back to Utah.
Yeah. Well, a corner of the valley I would not describe as super moderate has a little tie to the show, but Riverton had a race between two council members, I believe both coming off of the council. Mm-hmm. I always pronounce her last name incorrectly, but I think it's Tish Brooker and Tawny McKay. So wife of Senator Dan McKay, who was on this show for many years. And I thought this was an interesting one because Senator McKay said, you know, if she gets elected, I'll step down from the legislature. Or I won't run again.
Re-election.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a blowout. Mm-hmm. I served on the county council at the same time they were both council members. And I'll just say, Tish was really wonderful to work with. Seems like a real dedicated community servant.
I don't know Tish.
Dan and Tawny have always been great friends, but it was kind of a bruising battle down there.
I don't know Tish, but I think very highly of Tawny. And she'll find something else that'll be really good for her. Hey.
I was going to say, down in my neck of the woods, so in Orem, there was an upset down there for mayor. David Young, the incumbent, lost to Karen McCandless.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a little bit of a shocker from my perspective.
First female mayor of Orem.
That's probably true. And then down in Provo, it looks like Mayor Kafusi, the incumbent, is barely holding on. It's a very tight race, challenged by Marcia Judkins from the legislature.
Who I also quite enjoyed.
Yeah.
Marcia's
a great person.
Yeah.
So. Should we go far south to the St. George area?
Yeah.
We've got Mayor.
I was also going to say we have three school board races. We have Alpine is splitting three different ways. And so I was watching what is the outcome of those races. So.
Yeah. I guess in St. George, you had a city council member, Jimmy Hughes, who squared off against Mayor Michelle Randall. and just watching how that plays out, it looks like Jimmy Hughes is going to get that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also noticed, I believe it's, please forgive me, Loganites, but I think Mark Anderson is going to be the new mayor of Logan. I believe was on the city council and is now moving into this role. I checked out the website. I felt like there were some things highlighted that I was a fan of.
Go serve, everyone. Yeah, go serve.
Yeah, go serve. Get out there. I will also just say Ogden seemed to move a little bit, I think, towards the progressive side of things.
Okay.
I would say overall, a really lovely night.
Did you hear about the AI message that went out in Ogden?
No.
Oh, there was a message saying, here's the preliminary results and everything, like 6 hours before the polls closed. And so Ricky Hatch, Clerk Auditor there in Weber County, and the Lieutenant Governor and her office were putting out messages to let folks know no results have been released. They won't be released until 8:30 p.m. You know, go vote.
Yeah.
And stuff. But it's one of those things of modern tech.
We've got
because it looked like it came from the LG's office, message.
Well, leave it to AI to give us more trouble.
I'd love to give a little shout out to Natalie Bradley, who looks like she will be sitting on the holiday city council, who slid into my DMs on Instagram to say that she felt inspired to get in and serve her community because just like watching all these times that I've, you know, taken a run at it. I'll just say I'm really, if you are sitting here listening to this show, you care about your community. Think about it. It's
look
a
at
lot.
All these people.
Yeah. Look at all these wonderful
done this
people.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
And even though it's hard, I would say probably same for you, generally nothing more rewarding.
Yeah. It was a real gift.
Than serving the community, trying to help solve problems and help people navigate.
Yeah.
And address challenges that they have. So
yeah.
We've got about 4 minutes left in the program. I want to do just a couple of things. One is, can we just talk about shutdown for a minute? What are y'all thinking? I mean, I'm of the opinion that Thanksgiving's right around the corner, air traffic controller stresses are getting higher and higher. I think this thing ends in the next week.
I seem to recall you guys rolled your eyes when I said nobody really cares and this is going to go on for a while. And I said that like a month ago.
Yeah.
And we're still sitting in that situation to a certain extent.
Notice.
A lot of people just aren't even noticing. Now, I think if it goes, well, clearly if it goes to November 21st, the House has to do something because the CR has expired.
Yeah.
But I think if they get too close to Thanksgiving, then, you know, and air traffic controllers and FAA, you know, folks and TSA folks aren't showing up to the job.
Yeah.
There's going to be major blowback on all fronts.
I just have to say, I think I rolled my eyes maybe for a reason a little different because I do know you to be a caring person and folks that are now seeing half the money on their SNAP benefits who are, you know, heading into November quite hungry for our folks. There are many federal workers across the state, maybe some who are listening mm-hmm. that are living in real limbo mm-hmm. that do not know where their next meal or is going to come from.
Sometimes
or
it's both the husband and the wife. One's on a federal contract, one's a federal employee.
So yeah. I just want to give...
Well, the federal worker generally gets back pay, the contractor does not.
Yeah. I want to give a real hug to folks that are stressed and just say that we, you know, I believe we all would love to see this come to a resolution as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm of the opinion, I know the House members have gone and they aren't there. I think they should be
back,
essentially locked in the Capitol, forced to negotiate something.
Yep.
This
That'd be great.
The job of
Don't
Congress
leave this room
is,
till we get it done.
The job of Congress is to negotiate. And that is their job and they are derelict.
And people really are starting to see their ACA premiums come in. And I do think the longer that goes on without the Republicans acknowledging that that's their doing, trying to do something about it, it's going to be a disaster.
And we have President Trump calling for the filibuster.
Yes.
This is dangerous territory.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
He's willing to pay a certain price, but, you know, doesn't think about the long-term consequences.
What goes around comes around.
Yeah.
Both the parties have known that, and that's what's held it off for this long.
Now
but
here we are.
Well, here we are, and strange things have been happening.
And I complain about the filibuster, but one of the benefits of the filibuster is it forces more predictability mm-hmm. in terms of we're not going to get whipsawed like we get whipsawed with executive orders of new president, new orders. At least this forces some broader negotiations of a compromise to get an agreement.
Last 2 minutes. What do you guys think? Governor Cox is saying that he'd welcome this ICE detention facility. Kind of surprised me.
Yeah.
I might be a little quiet on this one if I were in the governor's seat. It brings a construction jobs and federal money to the state and it gives you a place to, you know, house people as you're going through the legal process and whatnot. But it doesn't sound like my state.
Well, I'll just say
doesn't
by comparison.
Doesn't sound like my country either.
Yeah, I'm with you there. So 10,000, right? Our prison, the new prison, I believe, is about 3,600. So this is a significant number of people who will be, I mean, the only phrase I can continue to think about is interred. Uh-huh. I think when we're seeing this and we're uh-huh. seeing this proposal for a homeless internment camp out on the Great Salt Lake, for me, I've been seeing a lot of the governor posting on social media about let's build a concentration, like a modern day concentration camp, is not what I had in mind.
Yeah. John, quick comment on that.
I'm just going to say there's a difference. If this is more like a prison of the true criminals that are illegal immigrants in America, I think it's appropriate. If it's something that's more like an internment, if it's more like an internment camp, then I think Utahns are going
to
have a problem.
They'd have to be importing criminals to our state.
Yeah.
I don't like that. You know, it's sort of like importing. Yeah.
We're good. That's
yeah,
just,
it's sort of like importing nuclear waste.
Yeah. I mean, I just.
Oh, we don't like that
well,
either.
Yeah, I don't.
I just think that what we are seeing over and over again in the data of these individuals who are being picked up, this administration, driven by Stephen Miller, is saying we need to hit quotas, and people who are legal citizens who are here, including the woman who was ripped out of the airport screaming, I have my papers, who it turns out does have her papers. This is not, I don't believe, as Republican as we may be, that that is who we are or what we want.
We got to wrap. Thanks for the discussion, John, Shireen. Programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.